Hey, I'm Daniel Colburn.
And I'm Caleb Porzio.
Welcome to 20% Time, where two coworkers discuss one programming topic every Friday for less than 20 minutes. Hey, what's up? It's Daniel. I just wanted to update you guys on why there haven't been episodes for a couple of weeks. So Caleb took a little bit of time off. I took a little bit of time off. And we're both pretty deeply embedded in big projects right now. So we haven't had a ton of 20% time to throw around the last couple of weeks. This is just something that happens once or twice a year at Titan. But anyway, so we recorded this episode last Friday. And then we both got super busy and no one had time to edit it and put it out. So it didn't come out. So now it is this Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And I am editing this episode and putting it out that we recorded last Friday. But from me to you, I promise there will be an episode next Friday. Love you. Bye. Sounds good.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, I'm sore.
You're sore? More camping?
Some mountain backpacking.
Oh, some mountaineering. Stuff.
Mountaineering, is that what you call it? Yeah.
I'd call it that.
Sweet. Yeah, some of that. So we've been out for two Fridays in a row.
Yes, 2 weeks.
You were playing...
A fortnight.
What were you doing last week?
I was playing Destiny 2 last week. I took like half a week off because Destiny is important.
That's great. I admire that.
It was great. Yeah, my brother-in-law was like switching jobs, and that happened to be his week off of work between two jobs. Nice. And we have played Destiny together for a while, and a bunch of my friends were taking some time off, and so we all just took time off and played Destiny. It was a great half a week.
That's pretty great. Yep.
And then you were in the woods.
And then I was in the woods, yep. Friday, cool. Sunday, woods time. It's pretty crazy. The woods definitely whooped me, so.
You've been hooped.
I've been hooped, yep.
Very good. Well, it's Monday, which is not our traditional day.
Yeah, it's a good day.
It's a day.
It is a day. Yeah, it's probably a better day to... launch a podcast.
Yeah, I think more people are around.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not going to change the intro, though. It's still going to say every Friday.
Right. We never still change
the less
intro.
Than 20 minutes.
The intro is never right.
Mm-mm.
Yep.
Now it'll be wrong in two ways.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I haven't been following Laravel at all in terms of pull requests. So, and I didn't even try. I was like, you know what? I'm too tired. So
yep, I think our good friend Keith Damiani got a pull request merged.
Yeah, did you look into that?
I skimmed it. Basically, I believe the deal was had to do with sort by, and right. Basically, there's like lots of situations where you want to like sort by like A and then B.
Mm-hmm.
So like, say I want to sort by featured or not featured. And mm-hmm. then by publish date. So right. I want to show all of the featured posts from latest to, you know, first.
Right.
And then I want to show all of the unfeatured posts from latest to first.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're sorting by multiple dimensions, apparently there was a bug where whatever way that it was going through and looping using sort and asort in PHP
mm-hmm.
Would like transpose some things that had equal values. So, say I had, like, you know, item A and item B, and they had the same value for both.
Okay.
And A was first.
Yeah.
If I ran them through these sort algorithms, B would be first.
Okay.
And so that would be very confusing if, for lots of reasons.
So the keys are different, but the values are the same of A and B?
I think so. I think that's what it was. You'd have to really dig in with Keith. We'll get more info on that.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, that sounds like, I mean, that's like the, that's sort of what JMO was talking about. He like, I think one of Titan's most recent blog posts, JMO posted about like non-deterministic pagination results from SQL. And it was sort of a similar thing where like, if you don't sort, like, you know, if you're not careful when you're doing those group type sorting, things can get sort of whacked within those groups. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
So you want to talk about microservices?
I do want to talk about microservices.
Yeah. So this is interesting. I'm working in a microservice architecture, which is crazy. I've never done it. I've been full on monolith forever. And maybe I've worked with like some internal services, like one or two, but never an app that delegates everything to microservices. So that's sort of where I'm at right now. I'm working on a Laravel app that has no database. There's just no database. Wow. It just talks to microservices.
Okay.
Within the VPS or whatever you call that. I don't know. Yeah.
That's
so
crazy.
It's interesting. It presents a whole new set of challenges. It's a totally different paradigm. All the ways that I've sort of come up with this, all the ways that we've come up through, you know, the various tutorials and ways of doing things with this database thing, where you're seeding stuff and you have factories and you have database transactions and migrations and all that stuff, that's all gone. So
yep.
I'm trying to navigate these waters of like, how do I write a feature? How do I test a feature? And, you know, like, you know, do it in a local environment. How do I do all that stuff without being able to have like a SQLite in-memory database thing or something, mm-hmm. database transactions or factory? Like, I don't have control over stuff, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. So that's presented a whole slew of challenges, and I've just been navigating those waters and sort of step-by-step brainstorming, and I'm pairing with Keith a lot, and we're figuring out the best ways to go about testing a feature that's, you know, all microserviced out. So, yeah.
So, do you have an example?
Yeah. So, I guess there's a couple. Here's one that, like, so one of the benefits, quote-unquote benefits of the microservice thing is, mm-hmm. is parallel. You can work in parallel. So, let's say me and another guy, Jeff, let's say he's in charge of the microservice endpoint for something. I don't know. Account, like a profile, like saving a user profile. And mm-hmm. I'm in charge of the UI, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have to like build the whole thing in Laravel, the UI, the view components, the route, the validation, and mm-hmm. the service class that you know hits that endpoint, and he has to build the endpoint. So the idea is like we could work in parallel, because you know he could work on the endpoint while I work on the service. But for us to do that, I have to work on like a mock, you know.
Yeah, and he has to define a spec, and your mock has to match his spec, and if his fields change, then your fields have to change.
Right, exactly, yeah. So when we started kind of doing this, we weren't really defining those specs up front, so we immediately started doing that.
Yeah.
And then I saw a tweet by TJ Miller, 6Live, and it was like something about Apiary, and I'd used Apiary before, but I'd mm-hmm. only used it to document like external-facing APIs.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it has a mock server, so you can use it for your internal microservices, where basically we have a meeting before, you know, a sprint, and we spec out like what the endpoint is going to be, what it's going to take in, and what it's going to respond, headers and everything. Yeah. And then it gives you an endpoint that I can use and just basically develop to that endpoint while he's developing to that spec. And then the idea is by the end of, you know, the sprint, we can sort of just swap out the mock endpoint with his real endpoint, and everything magically works.
Can I ask an implementation detail?
Yeah, sure.
Is the guy making the endpoint, is that a Laravel app? Or is that like a Node app or something?
Laravel. But it could be Node. It could be anything.
So the layer between the two is purely for the purpose of organization. It's not like crossing a technical boundary.
It's not crossing a technical boundary, right? Yeah, it's just an architectural isolation choice, I guess.
Can you tell me, I don't know if you can say this or not, but do you have like a feeling for like how many daily active users this app has?
I really don't, honestly. I'm sort of new to the project, and it's definitely enough where, you know, the sky is falling all the time, and there's always these production, like, emergencies and high-paying clients and stuff. So I know there's things at stake. It's not like an incubator startup fluffy cloud thing. It's like real life, real grit
infrastructure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. So yeah,
that seems like something I would not do.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's I'm trying not to hate on it too much because that's like my bias as somebody who subscribes to the Majestic
Young Laracast guy.
As a Young Laracast guy, Basecamp guy, Laracast, Wathen, student of the Wathen, student mm-hmm. of the Way, the Otwell. Yeah, so, but you know, like every so often I find myself in a book or on like a Martin Fowler post and like, ooh, like, you know, this, these things are for good reason. You know, these solve a problem. Maybe I need this mm-hmm. giant orthogonal thing. But yeah, so we're working with it, and so far my experience is it's just really slow, like dealing mm-hmm. with all these people that own different services and having to do stuff with them is just slow. But that's just my own opinion, and I haven't quite fully vetted that yet. You know?
Yeah. So it's interesting. So my app, the one that I've been working on ever since we've done this podcast,
mm-hmm.
Is kind of like that.
Okay.
For different reasons, right? Like the reasons that app is more microservice-y have to do with like technical boundaries and budget boundaries.
Okay.
Like different departments paid for different parts of the app. And so, we built them at different times and it made more sense to like separate them so that we weren't stepping on each other's code and stuff like that.
Okay.
But I have also had that situation where it's like, oh, someone is building an API and I am building code that consumes that API and they're like in parallel development
mm-hmm.
and like it's weird.
Right.
And yeah, it can become very uncomfortable.
So what have you guys done? Like how do you work in parallel?
Tell you a story right now.
Please do.
So we are a contractor to a company working on some code that consumes an API.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then there's another contractor to that same company working on some code that generates that API.
Okay.
And then there's a guy in the middle
okay.
who is talking to both of us. And something broke, and I debugged it for some hours. And it turns out that the name of a field changed in a way that was not chill.
Right.
And so then he had to schedule a meeting with those guys who were in Europe. And then over the course of the next 2 days, we learned that not only had the name of that field changed, also the date formats had changed everywhere.
Mm.
And those were going to change again and again over the course of the next week. And no, we were not going to decide what format of date we would use in this application week. So that can be weird.
So is that a tech thing or a process thing? Like I could see that being a process thing where
that's a process.
He just kind of broke the rules on the process, but I could also see it being like,
well, no, but it's also partly our fault, right? Like
if you had a test suite that would ideally catch some of that stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, I think in that situation, it's like, I don't know that someone else is like, I didn't know that it was another vendor that was developing that API. Like I thought they were building it internally and I would just have access to the guy who was working on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like that's an example. But yeah, like what probably should have happened if we had known that is that I should have written a test suite that tested, I don't know, should I have written a test suite that tested their API?
Right. So let me explain to you how I'm testing this stuff, and then maybe you can tell me if that matches what you're doing or if what I'm doing would have caught that.
Go on.
Or not. Yeah, So basically, I started writing this thing, and I started with an endpoint integration test. So I'm writing a view component for a form, right? And then that mm-hmm. form submits some data to an internal endpoint, in my Laravel app, right? Not the microservice. So I hit that endpoint. So I started out TDDing this thing with an endpoint test. So like, you know, this, I don't know, get JSON and then the URL and then pass in a payload and stuff, right?
Yep.
So, and then expect that certain things happen. But so because I'm working on a microservice, here are my options. And I won't get into the stuff I tried before I figured out that Apiary has a mock service. Like, mm-hmm. I ended up doing crazy things with PHP VCR, and mm-hmm. Which kind of worked out, but kind of didn't. So anyway, let's just assume we're picking up with this Apiary thing. Mm-hmm. So I have two options. I could test the actual endpoint, right? So I could do an mm-hmm. actual real endpoint hit that then, you know, like hits an endpoint on my Laravel app that then hits an endpoint on the microservice, the real one. Or I could sub out, so I guess three options. I could sub it out with an Apiary mock server endpoint every single time I run these tests. So the tests mm-hmm. just sub, you know, do some like, I don't know, container swapping or whatever.
Right.
And sub in Apiary. So it's actually hitting a real endpoint, but it's not the real endpoint.
Right.
Or I could mock out on the service layer. So let's say I have like a service layer, a bunch of classes that are in charge of wrapping up those endpoints, those microservice mm-hmm. endpoints. I could mock those services and just say like, should like, you know, let's say account profile service should receive create profile once with this set of data and return this set of data.
What was your first option again?
First option is hitting the real live endpoint.
Second option. Okay, you have a fourth option.
Apiary. Third option. Mocking the service layer. What's the fourth?
Fourth option is you don't use Apiary. You just like copy the JSON into a JSON file and serve it in your tests.php route file that gets loaded when environment is test.
Interesting. So I would swap out. Okay, walk me through that.
Okay, so you create a test.php routes file.
Okay.
You only register.
I'm liking this already, just so you know. Just that.
Yeah.
Just this
when
idea.
When environment is thanks, Samantha Geitz. This is her.
Okay.
Thing. When environment is test, you load that routes file. In that routes file, you basically have a bunch of stub routes.
Okay.
That do things like, so for example, we have like all of these different APIs we're consuming that are like WordPress and movable type blogs and RSS feeds and mm-hmm. all kinds of other feeds of data, right?
Okay.
And so we have like a WordPress.stub JSON file and a movable type.stub JSON file and blah, 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 blah. And so we just, for each of those, we just return, like we
that stub file.
Register an endpoint and we return the contents of this file that is stored Ooh. In our test/stubs directory.
Whoa. So couple thoughts. What do you name the routes? Like, do you match the actual?
Yeah, it's like slash. No, we don't.
You don't. Okay.
Doesn't matter.
Right. Doesn't matter. So how do you, in your test, how do you swap out for the test route?
Environment variables.
So you have an environment variable that says like WordPress endpoint.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you could put in the real one or you could put in your own local
stub
endpoint.
Yeah. So in our PHP unit.xml, we're setting all of our stub ones.
Dude. Okay. So many thoughts.
Actually, I don't actually know if we're doing that with environment variables. We might actually be doing like some reflection stuff.
How would that work?
Because of the name of the test, basically.
Like the name of the test would determine what?
Yeah, I don't exactly remember. I can actually look it up.
That's crazy. But either way, the concept
either way
is the same.
Fine. Yeah.
Right. So, okay. But so one thing I'm thinking is the JSON stubs. Uh-huh. Those are your current...
this is where it breaks.
Right. That's your conception or whatever the word is of what the endpoint's going to return.
Should return.
Right, should return. And if
so what's missing from it
yep.
is a set of tests that are in their own test suite that don't run normally.
Right.
And Adam actually talked about this when he on his latest Full Stack Radio
yep.
with Taylor.
Yep.
A set of tests that just test that
yeah,
those endpoints
what,
return
them, right.
what I think
he
they
should.
He
called them contract tests.
Contract tests. That's what's missing. Because the current issue, and the reason we didn't catch this until it hit the staging server... is that all of my tests passed because if the data was how it should have been, everything would have been fine. The issue is that the data changed, and so everything broke when the data changed.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
And I had no tests to make sure that, you know, so, mysterious third parties were honoring my data.
Right. So let's make sure that contract tests are the thing that we would be doing here. So what Adam said in, I don't know, what full stack was it? It was one with Taylor, right?
The latest one with Taylor.
Like you said. Okay, so in that...
It was called Testing Laravel Applications.
Right, and I think it was towards the end. He's talking about this... All right, so I have an account profile service. Right. And that class is in charge of hitting real microservice endpoints. Mm-hmm. And so he's saying you create a fake account profile service. Like, it's literally called fake account profile service, mm-hmm. that returns stub stuff. So it basically... It's as if it behaves the same way the real one behaves, but instead of hitting an actual endpoint... It mm-hmm. does, you know, like if you, let's say you say save profile, maybe it stores mm-hmm. an internal array of the stuff you told it to save. And then if you hit retrieve profile, it sort of just takes it out of memory and like at that property of that class and spits it out. Right. So that's how like the faking thing works. Mm-hmm. And then in his tests, he just uses the IOC container to swap in the fake instead of the real one. And I started down that path. I started with a fake account profile service.
Is that what a contract test is, though?
So the contract test is that how does he make sure that his fake account profile service behaves the same way as his real account profile service? That's his test to make sure that the method signatures are the
same.
So
he hits the real endpoint and compares it to his fake endpoint.
Right. I'm guessing that he actually hit... Right.
I'm
he
sure it's
to.
Just like C JSON structure.
Yeah. I'm thinking that's the idea. Is that I would love to see an actual contract test that he's written and see what it looks like.
Yeah, but no, it's a really good idea.
I started down that fake route because I love the concept, and this was like a couple weeks ago, but I ran into that same thing. But I wasn't thinking good enough like to realize that what I needed was contract tests. But I just felt that like, oh, this is weird because I changed something in the real service and I didn't change it in the fake and it didn't catch it and it was weird. And I was like, I don't know how I feel about this thing. This is kind of, you know, whatever. But contract tests are that missing link to mm-hmm. link the real.
So let me tell you another story.
Okay.
So in the same app, in addition to consuming random APIs, I am also generating APIs to be consumed by other random people. Okay. And so... One of the things Samantha did was write a bunch of contract tests, essentially, mm-hmm. that tested our API and basically took all of our documentation examples and turned them into tests mm-hmm. and just tested that our API matched with the documentation.
Right. Okay.
And so that is basically only so that like as we're doing things, we know that we're not breaking like... the API that goes out to them.
Gotcha. Okay. And so if somebody came into your app and changed up the documentation, those tests would still pass. They would give you a false positive, right?
Right.
Right. So there's a little bit of breakage there.
There is a little bit of breakage there, but it's like, I don't know what else we could do about that.
Right. So the beauty of Apiary, the thing that I think Apiary is solving is that
it links the documentation to those tests.
Well, right. It links the documentation to the mock endpoint. And you use it as the definitive end-all be-all spec. So if you're working with an API that is internal, that you're working with a person, you know, who's in charge of it, you right. can both worship the spec. You both live and die by the spec. Mm-hmm. And if one person changes it, then your stuff's going to fail. Mm-hmm. And then vice versa. And if it doesn't fail, this is the interesting thing. Apiary has an inspector option where... If let's say that Jeff, the guy building the microservice, he goes into Apiary and just changes some endpoint, and let's say that my tests don't necessarily fail because of it.
Right.
Let's say he changes the expectation of a received of a request something. When I run my test suite, I can go in Inspector. An Inspector will tell me if the data I sent to it matches the spec. It does its own kind of test, and you can add stuff like required fields, primitive types, like string, array.
And then does it auto-document all of that?
And then Apiary will just, right, it'll, yeah, so you document like the request parameters, and you can pass in extra stuff, like this one's required, it's a string, or this one's an mm-hmm. array, here's the description, and it takes that data and uses it so that if it receives a mock server request, it'll let it pass. This is the weird mm-hmm. thing. It doesn't have its own validation, like it doesn't fail automatically, but it stores a log and shows you if a request didn't match the spec. You know? So I could see that being useful.
Could you integrate that into CI somehow?
I mean, it is useful. I use it. That's a good... Right. So that's the only problem with that.
Because that's the thing, is I would want my build to fail.
Exactly. That's the issue, is that it just sits... It, like, if you violate the spec, it's just sitting in this inspector log. And if you don't look at it, nothing ever happened.
So there's no, like, webhook option for that?
That's a good question. That would be worth looking into.
Oh, yeah, that would for be, sure.
That, I'm going to write that down.
Write
that,
it down.
I'm writing it down in my scratch.md file.
Oh, excellent.
Yep. Yeah, okay, web hook or something for apiary inspector. Okay. Yeah, so I could see that being sweet. Yeah, so I guess there it's sort of that, like, where do you have, like, that you have to connect the real and the fake, and mm-hmm. where do you do that? Do you do it mm-hmm. with, like, I originally was doing it with, so I was just mocking stuff, just like PHP mocks. Then yep. I had to take it a step further. I wanted a next yep. level of stuff. And I basically did what you're talking about with the test routes, but in a mm-hmm. more hacky way. I just used PHP VCR. Quick briefing on PHP VCR, because I didn't know what it was until I started this project. It's the coolest thing. It's a PHP package where in your test you say VCR on, and then you specify a tape. So you say VCR insert, and then you name the tape whatever you want. Then you run, you know, you do your code, and then at the end you say VCR eject. And what it does is it captures anything, guzzle, curl, HTTP get or whatever, file get contents. It hijacks that with whatever internal weirdness, and it stores it in a file. And then next time you run that test, instead of hitting the real endpoints and stuff, it just returns whatever it's stored as, like, its own stubs.
No way.
Yeah, and it's pretty dope. Like, the easiest use case, the most simple, like, thing to use it for is just pop it into your normal tests that hit external services, and now they'll just run way faster the second and subsequent times, you know? And you can set different settings.
I wish the namespacing and, like, domain wasn't so weird, but yeah.
What do you mean?
I just think the whole VCR thing is kind of kitschy.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's...
Really? Okay.
I think it's brilliant.
I feel like the word cache should be used.
I feel like that would put my brain to sleep, and it would be so vague in general. But I hear what you're saying. But I mean, VCR is kitschy, but I think it's, like, totally... Because you know, you record stuff on your VCR.
Right? Yeah, no,
Like you do, right? With your VCR.
Yeah, like I do with my VCR.
Like you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what I was doing was I was kind of using it not a way it's meant to be used, and taking those stub files, because they're just like JSON files or YAML files. And I was just changing the requests and responses to what I was expecting to get out of an endpoint that didn't exist yet.
Yeah.
And then I was preventing it from hitting a real endpoint. So all my tests would run instantly. All my code would be hitting guzzle, and my code would know the difference, but I would be adhering to this stub, this JSON stub. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
So that was my initial thing, but the problem with that is it's hacky, and you have to, like, open up a file, man. It's no good. The testing route thing is way better. Great call. But yeah, so I think we need to circle back to that original question, is would contract tests that Adam's describing with this fake service swapping in and out, would that have caught your issue? Is that the problem?
It would have, yes.
It would have.
But the issue with the contract tests is I wouldn't run them most of the time.
Right.
So I guess problem. I would run them on my builds, though. So maybe my build would have CI failed before it hit staging.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm doing the apiary thing because it's actually, like, I did it originally because we were just writing up, like, JSON requests and responses in, I don't know, Jira or something, and just writing JSON without, like, smart syntax and stuff was just a nightmare. And I was like, I'm just going to use apiary at least to write JSON stuff, you know?
Sure. And okay, so I have a thing. Yeah. I have a thing I want now.
Okay.
Here's the thing I want. I want factory objects to be responsible.
Okay.
So I want a factory class that is responsible.
Okay.
and then I want to use those as my stubs.
Done. I did it. That's what I did.
No way.
Yeah, so I didn't tell you exactly what I ended up doing.
You're so sneaky.
What option I did. So, believe it or not, my like end-to-end testing.
Oh, this is the most Caleb Forzio answer ever. Oh, yeah, no, actually, of course. I actually already did that. Yeah.
Come on, carry it's on. Factories. What did you think I would do?
Of course, it's factories.
Right?
Yep. Responsible factories.
Yep. Yep.
So that's what you did.
You wouldn't believe the method names. They're pretty...
Oh, I'm sure they're great.
They're explicit.
No, you just call them stub.
What's that? No. So there's... Oh, dude, you don't know. Life is hard over here in microservice land.
Okay. A lot of method names.
Oh, yeah. So the... All right. So the end-to-end test that I described, like the normal, you know, test-driven, API-driven thing. No microservice, right? I didn't use apiary in that stuff. I was tempted. I went back and forth. I tried a million different things. Sure. What I ended up doing was actually mocking out the service class and just saying in the beginning of my test, before I hit the endpoint, I say...
So you tried all the options. You actually did all of the
options. Everything. Yeah. I went mocked, then I went PHP VCR, then I went to apiary, then I went back to mocking.
I think should receive his code smell.
Yeah, so you'd think, but here's how I cover all the tests, and I sort of feel the same way, but I don't know. Like, I spent a lot of time working and pairing with Keith on this, and I feel like we worked through all those temptations and feelings. Like, but I don't know. It's complex.
We'll talk about it next week on the feelings episode.
Yeah, right. We should. We definitely will.
Okay.
So, so you have the endpoint tests, and they right. So I start out with the mock. I say account profile service or whatever. I say should receive create. Profiler, whatever, and with some payload data and return, and then the response data. So here's where my factory steps come in. Quick note, tangent, mocking this stuff, your services, becomes a zillion times better when you use real-time facades. It's crazy. Like,
okay,
you know the normal mockery, like money sign M or whatever equals mock, right? And you can't chain on your should receive.
Yeah, I don't really use mockery.
Okay.
I fake things, I don't mock things. I agree with Adam.
Okay. All right. Do it. Do it.
There's only a couple times I've ever mocked something.
Okay. That's fine. I use it.
Okay, that's fine.
But I don't that's use it fine. Like... I don't think I use it in the bad way. The like... I don't use it in the nothing knows anything about anything and everything's injected and I mock everything and my tests mean nothing. I don't use it in that way. I use it in the way, like, I don't have a real database. I need to know, like, what is the most... I hit an endpoint. I want to make sure that I need some way to know that it hits, that it calls some internal thing that commands something to delete something, you know? And how do you do that without checking in the database? Well, you could, like we talked about, mock out the endpoint, but it's hard to assert that gets hit, but even if you do, whatever. So I just mock out the service, and then I do test the actual service in a different test. So that's under test. And then the linkage of the two is tested in dusk tests. And between those three tests, I cover everything. But, so I start out with I do the mock. The interesting thing is, my quick diatribe on real-time facades. Without real-time facades, you can't chain on should receive to your mock object, which is really lame and makes too many lines. But real-time facades has like, are you familiar with real-time facades?
Yes.
Yeah. So you can just prepend facades to your use statement, to any class, and then it'll just facadify it. So you can just say, now you could say instead of like new account profile or whatever, you could say account profile :, I think it's mock, and then you can start chaining on your should receive and stuff, which is so sweet. You might not even have to do mock. Anyway, I'm going on. So I do the mock, and the question is, what do I pass into the should receive and the with, right? Or should receive and return, right? And so what I do is I have these factories that says...
I'm so glad you abandoned this direction of testing, right? In favor of the apiary thing?
No.
Oh, why?
This is real.
This is so complicated.
This is real life. If you saw my test, it's totally not complicated.
Okay.
My each test method is like Account profile service should receive create profile with profile factory :, for service request. Okay, this sounds super complicated.
This is so
it's
complicated.
Really not Caleb. When you get into it. And then my and return is profile factory :, for service response.
I get it.
Right? And then I do my get JSON hitting the Laravel endpoint. And then I say JSON should see, or sorry, I do my get JSON, and then I put in the URL, and then I pass in as a payload account profile factory :, for Laravel request. I can't even get into explaining why this makes sense, but it does.
Okay.
And Keith can back me up.
If you insist. My thought is that if you could have just turned that factory into JSON, you could have returned it from a stub route, and then you could have just tested the JSON.
Right. What's the problem with that? There's a problem with that.
There's not a problem with that.
There is, I swear.
I think it's fine.
Wait, tell me what I should do again.
Well, it wouldn't work yet. You would have to find a way to turn like factories into JSON, basically. But you take your factory, you turn it into JSON, you spit it out into a stub route, and then you hit the stub route and you test the JSON.
Right. The problem is that I have to hold that JSON. Okay, there are so many deeper things here that we could talk about for a long time. I started with factories that were literally, was like profile factory, one static method called stub that returned JSON. Like exactly what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I went away from that for reasons I can't quite verbalize at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah, because of the way all things are set up, whatever.
I believe you. I think we're getting away from like the general point, though, into like super deep implementation details of the app that you're working on, though.
We are. Well, I think this would apply to anybody working with microservices.
Okay.
And I feel like I should formulate my thoughts on why this was necessary instead of just using Apiary. I think I didn't want Apiary as like a part of my testing.
Yeah. No, that makes sense because it can't break your build.
Because Apiary can't break my build, you're saying.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
I think if you're going to have Apiary as part of your like domain testing, then it has to be able to break your build. And really, like more importantly than that, like because that's important for like the regression testing. But more importantly than that, you can't TDD with Apiary, right? Like all you can really do is just like regression test your API.
No, you
which
can
is
TDD
important.
With Apiary.
What?
That's kind of the whole point. You just define the spec and you use the mock endpoint before it even exists.
Sorry. I mean with the Apiary contracts.
Yeah, you can still TDD with them. You know what I'm saying? Like
No. I mean the things that like tell you whether you're in or out of spec.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying? Like that's what I would want to do is like write my whole spec, put it in Apiary, and then like start following the errors to build the API or to build the client.
Right. You can still do that.
Can you?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Right, but I know what you're saying, because if you stray from some of the, like, the endpoints work and the responses work, but there's no request validation, so that's the that's the issue, is there's no request validation that breaks your tests, it just logs the issues, so.
Yeah, although you would think the responses from Apiary would not be 200s if the request validation failed.
You would think. I see why they did it. You would think that. I felt the same way, but then it's like, well, what do you return instead of 200? I don't know. You can pass in this extra thing to Apiary called like should something. I don't know. That basically says what response code you want back, because you define multiple response code specs, you know?
Right.
And so that's a way that you could test validation and stuff and say like, put this in there and I want back 422, you know, and then it would give you back the validation response. But yeah, it's not intelligent. It doesn't give you back 422 automatically if your request doesn't match what it wants. So
gotcha.
That's the issue. That's why I can't just swap an Apiary and call it a day. But I can keep that. That's why I have all this stub or this factory madness going on. Yeah. So that's what I landed on. I mock out the service for my endpoint tests. I hit real services for my service test or API services while I'm developing. And then I use Dusk test to make sure that my view hits Laravel, hits the service, comes back and shows the right stuff. So that's my life as it stands. I love the testing routes thing. I'm really glad I know about it now.
Yeah, I still think that we could do more with responsible factories.
Like having a factory that uses the new responsible trait thing?
Yes.
Yeah, that would be pretty sweet. Yeah, the problem, yeah, and then just have contract tests to make sure that those responsible factories match the real services. Yeah.
Correct.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, anyway. that seems like a great, great freaking solution.
So I just want to like real quick mention this and then we'll talk about it another day on another episode. But okay. Like, here's the overlap I want, right?
Yeah.
Model factories for like queuing up models in your testing.
Okay.
Overlapping with, and these are just concepts. I'm making a Venn diagram here.
Right.
Overlapping with responsible, like basically fractal transformers, but without fractal. Right?
Yep.
So mixed in with testing endpoints.
Yeah, mixed in with testing endpoints. Yeah, okay. Interesting.
So I want to make a stew of those.
You
want to
make
things.
Factories not only serve the monolith, but the microservice architecture.
That's correct.
Yeah. I dig it. I mean, factories are useless to me. Stock Laravel factories are useless to me right now, which is a sad thing.
Why are they useless to you?
Because I'm not using Eloquent at all.
Oh, useless to you, right, in this particular time.
In this
time.
Instance, yeah.
Yeah, not like in general.
Right. No, they're great. Love them.
Love them.
Loved factories. Yep.
Sweet. All right, that's 40 minutes and 1 second. Good talking to you.
Yep, good chat. See you, buddy.
See you, man. And a big shout out to Jared White for providing this music.